Good evening, everyone. I'm Joseph Cotto, and let me tell you about an epic story of victory, defeat, friendship, betrayal, heroism, cowardice, deep respect, blind hatred, and above all else, the struggle for survival. It is my new book, Runaway Masters, a true story of slavery, freedom, triumph, and tragedy beyond 1619 and 1776. Check it out on Amazon by following the link below. The paperback is $9.99, and the Kindle version is $4.99. If you're a Kindle Unlimited subscriber, you'll be able to read it for free. Hope that you enjoy the book. The book is what I discussed with Chrissy when I was on her show, but that's not the topic of discussion tonight. Chrissy Marr, of course, is here with me today. Chrissy, how's it going?
It's good. We can still talk about your book, Joe. We can let's go talk about your book. You wrote a book. It's more than I've done.
Well, actually, you have something more interesting, dare I say, to discuss for this podcast, but we can bring it up later on if you like. Well, this stream now, it'll be released as a podcast later. I like to be, you know, perhaps overly technical about that. But anyway, it's very great to have you here, Chrissy. Thank you for coming on the show tonight.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for wearing that adorable, how was I making fun of your hat last time? That you looked like you were part of an a cappella group mm-hmm. or like a chimney sweep.
Hardly an insult. No, it's a boater hat and it's from Italy. So I don't even know if I'm sure they make them domestically, but not as good. Anyway, I've been told that I should get a bigger one for my head, but this one's pretty comfortable. We'll see. But I started wearing this thing in order to not get skin cancer when I'm out, you know, in the sun. And I just wore it for the show one night because my hair was basically unmanageable. And so I threw it up and it's become a staple of the show ever since. So that's the story of the hat.
I should have worn a hat. I have like a big sun hat. I'm getting into hats too. I have like this one. It's just like, right. It's a big sun hat. And I think that's better than sunscreen. Like I was getting a wax the other day on Monday and my waxer lady was telling me that, yeah, most sunscreens are just like not really good for you. It's better to do what you're doing with the hat, to do like a physical sunscreen than, you know, a lot of the things that we're putting on our skin just have like a lot of terrible chemicals. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, now you tell me.
Yeah, a lot of sunscreens are not worth having in my rather humble opinion. But, you know, it's to each his or her own. But I never was big on sunscreen also because I didn't like how it makes your hands sticky after having used it. And that, you know, could create a host of issues, at least for me. It's annoying. But, of course, if you don't want to get skin cancer, at least sunscreens that are effective can be a good idea. But who knows what other health problems they might cause. That probably depends on the exact sort of sunscreen in question. Anyway, while this discussion of sunscreen and hats has been
I'd rather get my hands sticky the old-fashioned way.
That would be probably
that's a great funny. Laugh. That's a great laugh. That's your real laugh. That's like your straight up real laugh. I love that.
Yes, it is. Well, thank you. Anyway, if you have a reasonable, responsible question or comment for Chrissy or myself, please do leave it via Streamlabs. But leave it as soon as you can. Please don't save it all for the end. Thank you very much in advance. You've had an eventful few days, Chrissy. You went on Megyn Kelly's show. Yes. And that event garnered quite a bit of publicity. As a matter of fact, I'm reading this article, which was published in Newsweek, but it was republished by MSN about the event in question. And I guess as this old saying goes, all publicity is good publicity. So you're certainly getting a lot of publicity. But anyway, please explain what happened.
So, yeah, we taped her podcast on Friday and I was loving it because it was not on camera. It was audio only. I didn't have to put pants on. I didn't have to put makeup on. Like I didn't have to prepare and put on a face like I do for yours, Joseph. So I'm like, oh, this is great. And then it aired Monday and we talked about a lot of topics, cancel culture. I talked about how I don't care for the opinion of say, oh, Seth Rogen or Cat Williams when it comes to like cancel culture or like jokes that like comedians, like in terms of like PC jokes, like they'll frame it like, oh, you have to accept when a joke has aged out, or you have to, like Cat Williams' point of view sounded like, oh, well, we have to be more sensitive, and he was comparing it to, well, we have the speed limit for a reason. And I was like, that's not a fair comparison at all, because words like a speeding car are not inherently dangerous. They are only have as much danger as or meaning as we give them. And I think once certain words or topics become off limits, like that's a pretty slippery slope, as we all know, with all the censorship that's been going on the last, well, really cranking up the last year. And many of our like colleagues, et cetera, have been getting censored and booted off Twitter and YouTube and all that. And so I just was like illuminating to Megan. I was like, yeah, I don't really care what Seth Rogen has to say about stand up or cancel culture. Cause first of all, he's fine. He's set. He's making a living. Like he has, just like all these celebrities, have PR teams to help them through snafus. And a lot of them do this thing where they preemptively don't want to get canceled. So like I don't know if you saw John Leguizamo put out something this week about CRT. He was like ranting and raving, like, you don't know what CRT is. And like, no, John, actually you don't know what CRT is by your statement. But these celebrities will come out with these woke statements like kind of ahead of themselves, I think, to preemptively stop people from coming for them, to stop like a preemptive cancel. You know, like if they can be the ones to say, oh no, we need to do better, I think they honestly think that's going to prevent the left from coming for their heads, from going through, you know, Seth Rogen's catalog of like bonehead scenes in movies, and or going through rewatching John Leguizamo's The Pest and realizing like, oh my god, so many of these caricatures are like very racist, you know, let's cancel him. It's like, no, if he can come out with a woke soundbite, I think these celebrities think that they'll be protected. And we all saw like how long it took for Chrissy Teigen to face any kind of like ramifications for her insane bullying from over the years. It took Candace Owens finally being like, yeah, well, we're going to play the same game as the left. We're going to call it accountability and not canceling. And then finally she got what she deserved. And she had so many chances. I mean, Chrissy Teigen is another one. She's got a team of people. They've got so many PR tactics, you know. I mean, if somebody can fake a hate crime, could they fake a miscarriage? I think the answer is yes. I know that's a hot take, but I just really dislike her.
Without saying about anyone specific, miscarriages have obviously been faked before, as have pregnancies. One can actually buy ultrasound.
Those bellies, we've all seen those bellies, those fake bellies. And actually I follow, I can't remember the name, on Instagram. It's kind of like a conspiracy, like Instagram thing. And they're talking about, and also had photos of all these celebrities who have used these fake pregnant bellies. Like Katy Perry was one of them. There was rumor that what's her face had a fake pregnant belly. What the hell was her name? She was the one who got flack for like holding her baby like a piece of chicken the other day. Remember, she was like, she like had a sick body and she had like just given birth and still had a sick body, which makes the average bear go, maybe you didn't carry that baby yourself. I forget her name, but she's like a model, and she and the little boy had like matching bathing suits. So there's reason to believe that a lot of these celebrities don't carry their own babies for vanity reasons, or maybe it's something deeper than that. But many tricks of the eye going on. On that note, I'm opening up a White Claw. It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Absolutely. As I was going to say, so talking about the Megyn Kelly show, I know you went on there and you she brought up as I recall, she brought up the January 6th thing, and you began talking about it. And the media basically took one or two of the sentences you said, and of course there were many sentences, and it spun this stuff into a series of news articles which paint you in a less than flattering light. Any thoughts on what happened there? Or if I got anything wrong in my timeline.
No, you're doing great. You're doing great. Yes, they are. On this one, they are mostly coming from Megyn Kelly because she's way more famous and way more, I guess, sort of nationally hated than me. But I'll get there one day. And, you know, a lot of conservatives sort of were critical of her because she, I guess, they didn't like the way that she moderated one of the debates that Trump was in, or maybe, you know, she was critical of Trump. So some of my fans were worried that when I did this interview that she was going to try to do a gotcha on me. And I'm like, no, she has nothing to gain from making me look bad. But who does have something to gain from making me look bad is Newsweek and Media Light and all of these outlets who have, you know, they did a quote from the podcast. And look, I know I say like a lot. I'm working on it. I'm really working on it. But of course, what they took out. And I don't have a script when I do these shows, when I do these interviews. Just like, you know, most people don't have a script when they go on somebody's show. But again, I'm just like off the dome. And of course, you know, she's asking me about January 6th and I'm saying like a lot. And so what they decided to like take out and put in their article was me saying, oh, I was there. And like January 6th was like, so not a big deal, which if I had never seen any of the footage or any of the photos from the mainstream media, yeah, I would maintain that that January 6th for me was pretty chill and not a big deal because wherever, whatever side of the building that I was near, I can't remember if it was the north or the south side, but when they have all these pictures and footage of where it looks like, you know, just Braveheart reenactment, just like this mess of, you know, people, like I was nowhere near that. So many hundreds of thousands of us were nowhere near any of that stuff and did not know what was going on till hours later when our Wi-Fi came back to our phones and we were walking back to our hotels. And if Matthew Dowd and some of these other, you know, journalists can compare January 6th to 9/11, well then like, shouldn't I, somebody who was there, be allowed to refer to it as not that big a deal and kind of chill, you know, especially in comparison to all the BLM destruction and riots from the summer. And of course they don't want to give it context and add the part where we were like, yes, of course there was a faction that went kind of cray. And yeah, I think there was probably some FBI informants and people involved specifically there to stir it up and make shit look bad and set us Trump supporters up to look horrible so that they could hang this, you know, hold this over our heads till the fucking end of time, right? Mm-hmm. But never bring up any of the BLM stuff or Antifa stuff, which just infuriates us even more because we're like, are you kidding me? Like, it's so small and it's kind of like not a big deal compared to all the destruction. And then people go, oh, well, you were in the Capitol. And I'm like, I physically wasn't in the Capitol building, but people have gone in. I think when they were confirming, what's his face, 2018.
Kavanaugh.
Yeah, Kavanaugh. Mm-hmm. A lot of women in there wearing pussy hats. Oh, but Pelosi would say that they're participating in democracy. Well, not when conservatives do it, not when patriots do it, not when anybody in the middle or on the right does it. Well, now you're an insurrectionist, even though nobody had any weapons. So it's enough to make you crazy.
What happened in D.C. over the summer of 2020 alone, you know, was far more destructive on a dollar per dollar basis. And of course, in terms of loss of life than what happened at the Capitol. Of course, what happened at the Capitol was very much unfortunate. And, you know, I don't think anybody could say that it was a step in the right direction, to be mild. But at the same time, it's not even something that I think about very much just because what happened there was so low scale as compared to so much other carnage which has unfolded across the U.S. In over the last two or so years, that I mean it really just, you know, doesn't, in terms of the amount of damage done, doesn't rank that high. Of course, there are reasons that it's amplified to such a drastic extent, and among other reasons, it's that number one, it was at the Capitol, very high visibility place, and there was the count of the Electoral College going on. Number two, obviously it's a chance to say bad things about Donald Trump, and he had his very popular rally right before what took place, and he told people obviously to behave in a respectful, patriotic, lawful manner. There's no way one could say that he actually incited any wrongdoing there, but of course people say it anyway because it's not really about the facts. And number three, it's just a chance for the media to make people who are not on the left look terrible, and not only people who were there, but people across the country, you know, who they dislike. It's just really a chance to do a smear campaign. And, you know, obviously there's no playing down the fact that people went into the Capitol and did X, Y, and Z. We're doing some very unfortunate things, some very stupid things, to be blunt. And many of them were mentally ill. I'm sure they were goaded on by FBI informants and others. And there were also some lefties there, no doubt, stirring the pot as well, trying to incite people.
Yeah, what's his face? John Sullivan, was that his name? He was like a straight-up Antifa plant.
There was someone. It might have been his name, but I there definitely was someone that was proven.
He got paid from CNN to like give an immediate like after whatever after account of what had happened. Can't trust these people. Can't trust him, Joseph.
No, you really can't trust the media at all. That goes without saying. It's just, you know, they will, as I always say on Twitter, they will turn the most minor of things among people they dislike into, you know, these major events. But at the same time, they will downplay far worse offenses from people who they like simply because they like these people and they know their audience likes these people. And that's just the way it goes. And, you know, when people sort of amplify the event of January 6th into another 9/11, it's very disrespectful. It's like when people compare, you know, a some sort of, I don't know, fairly low-level persecution of a group in the present day to the Holocaust. It's just like such, you know, this over-the-top comparison that really cheapens people who died in these large, you know, tragic events. And it's crazy. It truly is.
It's like abusive. It's like, do you know, remember when you were a kid and like you do this, it's not really a game. It's just an annoying thing that kids do. Like you would try to talk, like, okay, so try to talk right now. It's like, you know, that game when someone just tries to talk already, like, maybe this is a scene from Austin Powers I'm describing, but it's like, zip it, zip, zip. It's like when person keeps trying to talk over you. That is what January 6th has become for any and all things, any and all concerns, from election security to ballots to spying on Trump. There's so many concerns, and like, just the one thing is, and they set it up for this express purpose. January 6th is their comeback for all of it. It's like, don't look behind the curtain. Like, the curtain is January 6th, and behind the curtain is all the real shit and all the real concerns that the American people still have and haven't been addressed. And it's like, it really is enough to like make you insane. Like, I mentioned this when I did a Kumia's show on Monday. There was this guy, his handle on Twitter was like Martyr Made, and he had an amazing thread, like so amazing that Tucker Carlson dedicated like, what, 7-8 minutes of his show to just reading it through. It was that well said. And he was like, yeah, this is, you know, from all the Trump supporters that I've talked to, here is why people think the election was borrowed. Because I know what YouTube does, but like, I'm not trying to say the thing. And then he had this very long thread. It was so well said. It illustrates perfectly all of the concerns over the last few years. Right. Any, you know, when Trump won, everybody was like, oh, we're the resistance. We're not going to accept this outcome. But yet when anybody in the middle or on the right questions 2020, oh, well, you're not allowed to question it. You're a shithead. You're an insurrectionist. You're trying to like subvert the outcome or whatever, all the other things that they've said about anybody who just questions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly. I mean, it's a total double standard, but that's the intent. The goal is to browbeat people who the left dislikes into basically submission. And there's no consistency there. It's just very much a gratuitous hatred for those who the left is not simpatico with. And they go through various, I would say, means of displaying that hatred. And one of them is using the media to turn anyone who's basically to the right of Barack Obama circa 2008 into some sort of, you know, right-wing boogeyman, like a new Mussolini. So it's really crazy stuff what happens. But I'm not surprised by it because, as I think I mentioned before we went on the air, we live in the post-truth landscape of the media. And what's happening now is just sort of par the course for such an unfortunate turn of events. I think that certainly one thing that is happening, though, is that people who are not on the left now are sort of losing all trust in the media itself, aside from a few outlets. And that's not necessarily a good thing, because when you only, you know, take a few outlets seriously, obviously you can wind up being lied to and manipulated. But people really are losing, who are not on the left, are losing all confidence, really, in what one would call the mainstream media. And it's good in a way, because you shouldn't believe people who are obviously spinning garbage. It's bad in a way because, you know, people go like to these conspiracy websites very often. But the bottom line is that the mainstream media has become so untethered from the truth that a lot of people can't see the difference between it and a conspiracy website. And in some respects, they're right, because the mainstream media does not really care about the about facts. It cares about its narrative, and it does what it thinks is necessary in order to sustain that narrative. It's just, you know, it's something that's basically incontrovertible at this point. I mean, you look at how it ran with stories like, you know, Trump arranged with Putin to put a bounty on the head of American soldiers. Then other stories about Trump said people should drink Clorox. I mean, it's just, oh, and you know, the stuff is so obviously insane, but so many people take it seriously. So then that they then look at a conspiracy website and say, well, why is this any less, you know, credible than the mainstream outlets? And then they begin to believe other kinds of nonsense, and the whole thing just spins out of control, which is where we are now, in a society that really has no mainstream, no core of identity, where folks just go creating their own realities, and the result is that these realities clash and bad things happen.
Yeah, and that's the reality that everyone's come to accept, to the point where, like, me, a person who was physically there on that day, can give my firsthand account of what I saw, my own two eyes, and experienced fully conscious. That can be just thrown out the window, completely disregarded. I was there. I'm telling you how it felt and what I saw. And, oh, no, I'm grossly exaggerating, or I'm lying for some strange reason to get what out of it. I don't know. It's just, they've done a really good job of pushing the narrative they want, of shoving the footage they want down our throats for 6 months, showing the pictures that helped them for the last 6 months. And it's like, I'm thinking, like, man, I have a lot of pictures and footage that I haven't shared, just because, like, things started to get a little squirrely. And I was like, oh, maybe I don't want to post, like, everything I have from that day. So it's wild. It's crazy. It's like, they're all about, oh, speak your truth. But it's like, I speak my truth, which was, I felt the day was pretty chill. And they quote it, they take it out there to make me look, I guess, insane, I guess, dumb, whatever their motive was, you know?
So have you had people contact you about coming on their programs and such since this whole thing reached the point it's reached?
Not anybody different than, like, the usual stuff I go on. Yeah, I talked about it on Anthony Cumia's show on Monday, just because I'm there every Monday, 5 to 6 o'clock. So, and then, yeah, I've talked about it. I talked about it a little bit on my live stream this afternoon, and you, and, like, we'll see how things develop. But it's, you know, it's not even the worst thing I've been through in terms of, like, shit storm of, you know, backlash, you know, which is good. I guess it's good.
Yeah, it really is. It's amazing how nowadays supposedly respectable media sources go out of their way, and they know what they're doing. It's not like they're doing this by accident. They cherry pick quotes, and then they throw these quotes out there to make it seem like this is the totality of your point of view. Mm-hmm. And they then use this to further whatever narrative they have, which is totally independent of you. And it's just sad. It's sad to see how this garbage has, you know, proliferated to such an extent that the whole country smells like a landfill now. It's sad, and it's disheartening and even depressing, but it's a reality that we all have to accept.
Yeah, and there was a girl on Twitter who, like, posted, I don't know how, and it looked like very much like a paparazzi photo, but she, like, had this photo of me. I was on top of this, like, temporary construction, like, trailer thing, and I was on there to get views, to get a better view of what was going on for, like, video and photos, along with, like, a couple other independent media people. And, like, she posts this picture, and then it's like a zoom in of my face. And I was like, ooh, I'm spotted. I'm like, yeah, but it's not a picture of me inside the building or crawling up the building. And I just was like, oh, wow, she is so thirsty for some clout. And I've noticed, you know, some comics, like, every time I'm in some controversy, which feels like every 6 months now, it's like there'll be a certain kind of lefty liberal comic who will mention my name, who will talk shit about me, like, just to get clout and likes on Twitter. And I'm thinking, like, wow, if it wasn't for me, you guys wouldn't have a whole lot to talk about. Like, maybe you should look at why you're not making any kind of news or making any kind of impact. It's because you fucking suck. Yeah, and people just like to hate. There's just, like, this kind of seething conflict between, like, woke comedians and non-woke comedians. But the non-woke ones are the ones thriving and working and being able to, like, kind of cobble together a living, whereas the woke comics, it's like, yeah, all right, you do a couple shows in Brooklyn, good for you, for, like, the same kind of echo chamber audience. Like, all right, if you like that, sure. Try doing comedy any other place in the country and see how that goes. Like, these people can't headline. They can't do more than like 15 minutes.
No, because they're very restricted in what they say, obviously. And they have a very niche audience. So there's not much point in bringing that out beyond wherever this audience is. And there's not even much they could say to that audience without aggravating the political sensibilities of it. So it leaves them, so far as comedy goes, certainly up the creek. You know, we'll get to Streamlabs, you know, soon. But I just want to say before that, you know, it's something because people who are on the left are often called liberals in American society. But there's really not much that's liberal about the left today. Not about, you know, when it comes to the free exchange of ideas or personal freedom or people living free of, you know.
Yeah, acceptance.
No, exactly. It's really what we're seeing now is, I think, a religion, a puritanical religion that comes out of many different places, but it's basically a new state church that seeks to control people's morality, and it gives them enemies, and it tells them to sacrifice themselves and their history, and the history of their nation.
Put your kid on puberty blockers, chop off their dicks, you know what I mean? If you're not willing to do these things, well, I guess you're not as accepting as we all thought. You're not as with it. You're not as cool. Mm-hmm. That makes me so fucking angry.
Of course. And it's even more beyond what you said. It makes you like a bad person in that from that perspective. And if you're a bad person, there's no forgiveness. You are to be shunned, sort of like how the Amish would shun one of their own who fell in love with a non-Amish person. And it's a religion. It really is what the left has become in this country. And it's a very unfortunate religion and a very evangelical one. It's spreading like wildfire.
Yeah, don't get caught using a flashlight. They're exactly like the Amish.
Yeah, and the Amish, I'm sure, are much nicer people.
They're probably chill. They're probably actually more fun at parties. They probably, they have probably better stories.
I have no doubt. I'm sure they're just nicer people. But the modern left is just puritanical. Actually, if there's one parallel I could draw, it's between them and obviously the people who put on the Salem witch trials.
At least there's a trial, you know. That's true. Here it's like you just get a label and like, oh, you're done.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely correct. Yeah, it's in many respects, as you said, it's even worse, but it's just a very unfortunate period that we live in. And I don't see it getting any better. But what I think will ultimately happen is that there will be sort of like parallel societies, if you will, where there won't be like a shared, you know, consensus, which there basically already isn't, but it'll just continue to go down the road it's been on, where, you know, people like have the same comedy shows, they go to the same video sharing outlets, they post on the same social media platforms. I think the future is just going to be totally parallel societies operating within the, you know, the geopolitical boundaries of the U.S. And it's unfortunate that things would get that way, but it does. I think that's the undeniable trajectory which things are on.
And it's very much the plan that the powers that be want. Like, they're taking advantage of the divisions among us that you can't see. And they're very much taking advantage of the physical differences, right? Race, ethnicity. And then we have like masks versus unmasked, vaccinated versus unvaccinated. It's like they're really taking advantage of every possible way to divide us up as a country, all the while completely ignoring the real issues, which are those of class and those of like, yeah, the elite, those that are like really, really in charge. And they're just like feeding us like we're fish in a tank, and they just keep putting little flakes at the top of the tank, and the flakes are just like the little distractions for the day. And then we swim up and we nip at them, and they're just like, and then we're so dumb, and we forget about what we're supposed to do because we're fish. We have a short attention span, and they're like, oh, more flakes. Are we fighting about gayness? Are we fighting about if gays can get married again? Are we fighting about trans rights, even though none of us know any trans people? Ooh, it's a cycle.
It is a very unfortunate cycle, but it is a cycle all the same. Anyhow, now finally to get to Streamlabs. By the way, folks, if you have a reasonable, responsible question or comment for Chrissy or myself, please do leave it via Streamlabs. Thank you very much in advance. But please,
or even unreasonable. I will take up to 5 unreasonable questions. Thank you.
As long as it doesn't violate the YouTube guidelines, then. But anyway, from Douglas Edward 84, Does Chrissy ever hear from other comedians or celebrities in private that are totally against the woke culture but don't have the courage to speak up? Does Chrissy have a rough percentage guess of true woke believers in entertainment?
Good question. Yeah, I do have a couple of like big celebrities. It's not anybody that's already like an out anti-woke person. Like everyone knows Gina Carano's like out. Mm-hmm. We've chatted like briefly. I'm trying not to be that person who name drops, but like as far as comics go, yeah, that's more the area where you have people that are not like out. They're still trying because there's unbelievable pressure even now, even after the like last year we've had, even with all the censorship, there's still like so much pressure to be default a lefty in comedy because that's where people are used to getting work from, right? Through Hollywood. They're thinking like, well, I got to impress somebody either in the clubs in New York City, very left, Comedy Central, very left, Netflix, very left, or like get acting gigs in Hollywood. That's all very left. So like comics just don't see, there's not a heck of a lot of opportunity to impress or cater to anybody like on the right. Even if they believe that way, it's like, well, the people who book stuff aren't really on the right or in the middle, unless you're like, fuck it all. I'm going to just work on my own audience, developing my own fan base, doing what I feel is funny, which is like what I've done. Comics like Aaron Berg have done, you know, Tony Hinchcliffe, Louis J. Gomez, Dave Smith, like all those guys that don't like subscribe, you know, to the leftist cult. And that's like, you're probably going to do better in building your own audience that way. I don't know. I mean, yeah, sure. There are like woke comics who do have their own fan base, but I think in terms of road work, you're going to do better if you're not a woke lefty. But a lot of comics are like, they see that I'm so open and out about it. I think that they do feel like inclined to hit me up about it. Cause they're like, oh, I don't know. Even it's like about the jab stuff too, you know, like I just have a feeling it's not all they're saying it is. And I'm like, yes, it's okay to use your common sense. It's okay to think for yourself. Like they've demonized being a free thinker, but then odd people like comics quietly, my DMs like, oh, is this, what do you think about this? And it's like, yes, you're right to question this stuff.
And do you have, I think Doug's also asked if you have any idea of a rough percentage guess of true woke believers in entertainment.
Oh, that's so tricky. Because of course, like with our culture, there's a loud minority of insane leftists as there is in comedy. Like it, so I, yeah, there's a small, very, very vocal minority. But like, if I would say percentage wise, I would say it's gotta be, I would say it's 40 to 50% like in the closet, you know?
Wow. That's a bigger number than I expected to hear. But the oppression, obviously, for coming forward with non-woke perspectives is so great nowadays that perhaps that number can only be expected to swell.
Yeah. And again, what do I know? I mean, like, I'm just going off of people who message me, you know, and I think at this point, like, a lot of leftist comics, like, yeah, they've, like, unfollowed me, but they still always, like, check up and see what I'm doing. So...
Gotcha. And from K-Max McDonald, Chrissy, do you K-Max. Take a very, very loyal supporter of the show and other shows as well?
Yeah, my show too.
Excellent. Always glad to hear K-Max chiming in. He brings up some really great stuff. Anyway, getting to what K-Max said, Chrissy, do you take an attack from our current media as a badge of honor at this point? I literally feel up is down and black is white with them. My new life goal now is so the opposite of what this media says. Whoever they call bad, I like now.
That is a good point. Yeah, I have to keep that in mind that it's fucking upside down clown world. Because I look at like the quotes they pulled out of the podcast and I'm like, that does sound bad. But then I'm like, you know what? There's so many people that heard the episode or read the article and they go, no, like I agree with her. Like it. they are blowing it out of proportion. And like, yeah, maybe I exaggerated my point because I'm just so fucking pissed off of people comparing it to 9/11. It's like, yeah, I'm allowed to exaggerate, just like Matthew Dowd can exaggerate and call it worse than 9/11. Mm-hmm. Just like so many politicians and people on the left have been really blowing it so out of proportion. It's like, yeah, okay, well, then let me exaggerate it then. Like, let some of us who feel differently, why aren't we allowed to exaggerate it then? And I just have to remember, like, yeah, a lot of, there are millions and millions of people who voted Trump. There was like 1.5 plus million people who were there on that day. And of course, like, these are not the loud, obnoxious assholes who spend their day like trolling me on Twitter. Like, if they're sort of quietly like, yeah, I'm feeling this and I agree with her, then I have to remember that. And that kind of does make me feel better. So yes, to answer your question, it is a badge of honor. Ultimately, like, all press is good press. And yeah, with this particular instance, yeah, like, Megyn Kelly's getting a little bit more of a beating. But, you know, like, the least they could do is shout out your girl's dates. Like, for example, this Thursday, I'm going to be headlining the Stress Factory in Bridgeport, Connecticut at 7:30. So check that out if you're in Connecticut.
And also from K-Max, for Chrissy and Cotto, do you both feel we have controlled opposition on our side too? A writer like David French and John McCain, when alive, only to scold the right and tone police. I call these Beltway conservatives. You guys see this too? I'll just speak very quickly for myself. Yes, of course. John McCain was someone who was totally vilified by the media when he was the GOP presidential nominee. Then he curried favor with the media afterward, essentially bashing his own party and, of course, Trump. And John McCain wound up going back on his word about many issues when it came to, you know, his anti-Trump activism. And then, of course, David French, his basic function is to tone police the right, as McCain did. But French, I think, really exists to sort of act as a house conservative, if you will, for people on the left, who they wanted to sort of, I think, manage the public image of those who are on the right or just the non-left. And obviously they want him to manage the image of these people to look as bad as possible. So I think that certainly there is controlled opposition on the non-left and the right specifically. And I would even also go say some people, I'm sure, who are on the far right are themselves controlled opposition from the left. I have no doubt about that. So, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of controlled opposition out there from my perspective. Chrissy, anything to say about what K-Max brought up?
For sure there's controlled opposition. Like, the Six is a really good example. Like, most Trump supporters, regular people, are not thinking like, how do I break into this building? Like, what do I have to do to sneak in? Nobody knows the layout really. Which is why they jumped all over, like, I don't know, the person who had the Legos. But yeah, the average person was not there to wreak havoc. You know, they're just there to be like, hi. Like, we're real people who with beliefs, who think what's going on is kind of fucked up. And yeah, there's an argument to be made that QAnon was controlled opposition at a time where a lot of people were vulnerable and upset and looking for answers. You could definitely argue that whoever that was, you know, took advantage of those people.
Certainly. And I, by the way, I will say, K-Max, that the Beltway conservatives are a big problem in the GOP. They basically exist to secure their position in DC society. And obviously that means they're not doing much for anyone else. Chrissy, anything to say about that before we move on?
No, I think you summed it up pretty well.
Excellent. And thank you. From K-Max, Chrissy Cotto, talking to you, Chrissy Cotto here debated Luke Ford on voter fraud, and Ford kept repeating, show me the evidence. The problem is the left controls the courts and big tech, so who could gather this evidence and out themselves? They would be, shall we say, damaged by this media and elites.
Yes, absolutely. They would not look at the evidence. They still won't look at the evidence. And they kind of control the arm of the government known as the media. So they're not going to press. No one's going to press on it except for just us regular people.
It's very sad that we're at this stage where, you know, any talk of, well, most talk of, you know, problems with the 2020 election, of which there were quite a few, and you could see sort of, not sort of, actually, there were hours and hours of testimony about these problems in various states and, you know, issues brought up that are supposedly conspiracy theories, but they're clearly not. And I'm not talking about voting machines. I'm talking about, you know, actual voter fraud. And it's really interesting that, you know, today there is this push to essentially treat someone as insane or an enemy of the state or whatever, if they bring up these very reasonable concerns that even Democrats themselves were bringing up before the 2020 election. It's totally unfair, but it is to be expected for reasons that I mentioned earlier. Anything to say about that, Chrissy Ford?
Yeah, it's beyond hypocritical. And like, this shit is not even that old. Like, exactly what you were saying, like, just in the last... with the last election, like, it was completely opposite, but it's like the rules don't apply for the right like they do for the left. And I don't know. Yeah. It feels like an abusive relationship.
Mm-hmm. What's really interesting is that the definition of the right keeps expanding, because it now includes, like I said, basically anyone who's to the right of Barack Obama in his 2008 campaign. And that was, at least in 2008, the majority of the country. But you could say the Overton window has shifted left so rapidly that's created this bizarre situation where, you know, you're demonized for being on the right, even if you have views which are not considered in any traditional sense to be on the right. It's really, it's created a bizarre state of affairs.
Yeah, it's wild. These are wild times.
Mm-hmm. To say the least. And from Row House, has Chrissy tried any port wines? I think.
Oh, right. I was meaning to. But like, what? Who has port around? I have to go get some is what I have to do.
I think based on the last show, if any of us are not getting more port wines, we betrayed Cotto.
Oh, we did.
Where can we get these port wines? More drink discussion. I'm not sure if you're asking me where to get port wines or Chrissy.
I don't know where to get port wines. That's your territory.
More drink discussion. Sure, I'd be glad to. Very good port wine is from Lake Ridge Winery in Claremont, Florida. And the area has hills, sand hills, ancient sand hills, and looks like a miniature version of Napa Valley. It's beautiful. If you're in Florida, you should be able to order their stuff online, but each state has its own laws, you know, when it comes to the shipping of wine. But I think Lake Ridge, I think they ship to all states that allow wine to be delivered. So it's really, it's a great port wine. I recommend people try it out. There are decent port wines. Otherwise, there are some port wines, which of course many would say are even better than Lake Ridge's, even though I think Lake Ridge is superb. But, you know, there was actually a port wine that I had recently that I got from, what was it? Actually, somebody gave it to me. And I forgot the name of it, but it's pretty good. It was from California, actually. And I liked it. You know, a lot of people don't like port wine. It's too sweet for them, whatever. But I'm a fan of it. And more recently, I was having cream sherry, which is very good. It actually goes well on top of paella, which is a Spanish seafood rice dish. And but cream sherry is just good to drink alone. But, you know, if you keep the cream sherry for too long, it obviously, like other wines, goes south. So at that point, it's pretty much just good to put on the on the paella. But no, I do like cream sherry as well. But I do like port wine better. So that's my take. Chrissy, anything to say about anything here that you'd like to bring up?
I would like to see a Cooking with Cotto segment where you are making paella with port. And then maybe you drop a bottle of the port, and then I chime in and I go, oh no, that was in a portion. And I make a dumb pun joke and no one laughs.
That would be pretty funny. No, I do like paella, but I do like the sweeter wines. I also recommend Moscato. That's an excellent wine, which is not for everyone, but I do like it. I don't know, Chrissy, what are your favorite wines?
Like, honestly, the correct answer is whatever's around. But if I'm trying to sound like I have standards, I do like a Sauvignon Blanc when it comes to wine. I like a Pinot Noir or like a Cabernet or like a Malbec, like really whatever. I'm kind of anti-Chardonnay, but, you know, I'm sure there's ones out there that would like make me change my mind. If it's like, yeah, before a show, I'm going to do Vodka Soda or like Vodka Soda Splash of Cran. Mm-hmm. occasionally like Bailey's with coffee or by itself. And then, yeah, I'm a sucker for like a Cosmo or like a fancy cocktail. I'm like very much a typical chick in that way. Like if we're at a place and they do cocktails, I'm gonna be all about that. I'm gonna run up your tab.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that when it comes to the kinds of wines people like, some people like all different kinds of wines, or they at least accept them. But there does seem to be a divide between people who like a sweeter and you all might say creamier wines, if that even makes sense. And then people like more bitter and drier wines. I prefer the sweeter wines, but you know, there is something to be said for the drier ones. But it's really just a matter of personal preference. Some people go so far as to say, you know, the sweeter wines are inferior to the drier wines and the more bitter wines. And I don't know exactly where they would come to that perspective from, but they do say it. I disagree with it, obviously. So as long as the wine is of good quality, as long as it doesn't have like, you know, sediment, as long as it hasn't been left out for too long, I think the wine should be just fine to drink as long as you're over 21. By the way,
be responsible.
You're such a dad.
You're like, be careful, kids.
Well, the irony is that, of course, I have no children, never wanted any, but I always get nervous about people drinking and driving, anything like that. It's interesting, because I actually do believe that the drinking age should be lowered to 18. I think raising it to 21 was a mistake. It doesn't make any sense that people are signed up for the selective service system and they can be drafted from the time they're 18, at least if they're men. And then at the same time, they can't have a drink. They can even vote, but they can't have a drink. Got to be consistent. I think that if you want to keep the drinking age to 21, I could live with that, but raise the voting age to 21, raise the selective service age to 21, and then that's that. But, you know, people have
totally. Here. Was it you who said you liked Moscato?
Yes.
Ugh, gross.
I think I remember that you weren't the biggest fan of it. but I'm sure if it were around, you wouldn't mind drinking it.
No, I would. You know, I would have some with you. If that was like all you had, I wouldn't want to be rude. And like, but the ones I've had have just been like syrupy and disgusting, like too much.
Got it. Now, yeah, it's not for everyone. Obviously, there are different kinds of wines. There are even non-grape wines, which I'm sure we all know about. In this part of Florida, a lot of people do grow like blueberries and strawberries, and they make wine out of it. They've even done that with oranges, which might sound almost impossible, but that has been done. I personally do prefer it with grapes, but I have tried blueberry wine, and that's very good. And even strawberry wine. It's different. I don't think it will ever have the respect of, you know, grape-based wines. But that's at least my take. Have you ever tried any of those, Chris?
No. It's like I have not branched out into other fruit wine. Mm-hmm. Well, I know what I'm doing this weekend.
Good. There is, I swear I'm not being sponsored by any of these people, but there is a winery in North Central Florida called Island Grove, and they do non-grape wines. They do, you know, non-grape fruit-based wines, obviously, and their stuff is very good. It's not ranked anywhere near like Lake Ridge's stuff, but it's very good wine. I enjoyed it. It wouldn't be for everyone, but I really do like it. And I'm going to refresh Streamlabs now. But before I go on with anything new that might be there, I will say that there is a certain kind of wine that comes out of China that a lot of people may never have heard of, but it's called baby mouse wine.
And baby mouse.
Oh, and it's what it sounds like. I've seen it. It's actual wine made out of rice. It's rice wine, which I've never tried that. It sounds terrible.
I think I've had that.
Really?
I think it's like sake. It's kind of similar.
It's a weird taste,
but it's not horrible.
Good. Well, the baby mouse wine has dead baby mice put in the wine. And they're at the bottom of the bottle, and they can't sell it in the U.S. to drink, obviously. But I have seen it at a museum, and you see the little baby mice dead at the bottom of the wine.
Ew! What?
Oh yeah.
Why? Chinese people are so fucking gross. Can we just like? Can that just be a thing? Like a commonly accepted thing? They're eating dogs. They're putting mice in their wine.
It's very common over there. It's supposed to be a health tonic, even though I have heard that it tastes like gasoline. So yeah. it's it's
we're not going to be visiting TikTok vineyards anytime soon.
No, no. And they actually eat the, you're supposed to eat the dead mice at the bottom of the wine. After
no,
you
drink the, no,
I've not seen it. Right. It's real.
It's like, I get it. Some people have eaten the tequila worm, but.
Oh, that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's gross too, but I don't want to see a mammal.
I don't blame you.
The wine. That's gross.
I would not, you know, even drink the tequila that had the worm in it, let alone eat the worm, but that's just me. Anyway, okay, from Row House, which YouTuber did you guys find to be the most smeared of their reputation for what they were actually like? Was it Molyneux and Lauren Southern? You have them on, and what's so extreme? Do you find this with others? I've not had Lauren Southern on, kind of. Godfrey, I don't know if Chrissy's spoken with her, but Molyneux certainly takes the cake for having the worst smears brought out against him. He is a hardcore libertarian. He is a true believer in individual rights and liberties and classical liberalism. And they took some comments of his about Poland, and they made it seem like he was a white nationalist, and it was just so crazy.
Same thing with Lauren Southern. Like, they did a heck of a job trying to paint her as a white nationalist.
Mm-hmm. It's nuts. Meanwhile, Molyneux has made too many statements to count in explicit opposition to white nationalism. So it's just disgusting what the media does to these people. There are others who certainly have been smeared terribly, but Molyneux stands out as the worst. I mean, of course, Laura Souther has been put through the ringer as well. Chrissy, anything to say about what Row House brought up?
Yeah, and it's just like a tactic. It's just like being called a racist. If you have any problem with what's going on at the border, it's like, if you just like care about the country, that's, they're going to spin it to make it about race. That's probably the easiest thing to do right now, because it's like, white people are so afraid of being called racist. Mm-hmm. So I think when that insult starts to mean less is I think when we start to get our power back, I guess.
It's really a crazy situation. And let me see. That was the last thing there. I will make another call. This it's not the last call yet, but of course, we're getting to the point where things will begin to wind down, but we're not quite there yet. If you have a reasonable, responsible question or comment for Chrissy or myself, please leave it via Streamlabs. And of course, reasonable and responsible means within the YouTube guidelines. So anyway, talking about, I suppose, the state of the country, it's very unfortunate. I do follow South African politics a lot because that seems to be where the U.S. is heading. It's also just interesting, period. But you know, a lot of people think the situation here is desperate and depressing, but they apparently have not followed what's going on in South Africa, because that is, you know, this on steroids. But I think that the U.S. is moving toward that toward that very sorry state of affairs. The ex-president of South Africa, Jacob Zuma, was just arrested because of a contempt charge. He did not testify in an inquiry into corruption during his administration. And now a lot of South Africa is on fire, literally on fire, because of that. So when you look at all the mob rule here, all the acquiescence to violence, and all that garbage, what you find is that I think we're moving in this sort of South African direction, which is very unfortunate, to say the absolute least.
Wow, that's really sad. Like, I haven't been following it super closely at all. But yeah, I could barely tell the difference between like the BLM rioting and looting and like what's going on over there.
Yeah, it's, you know, the when you look at pictures, I mean, the carnage looks the same. And it's interesting, I suppose, because South Africa is a beautiful country. It has a lot of really great people. It's not like, you know, some hinterland. And it has so much potential, so many resources, but it's so badly mismanaged, and the people have been sort of trained to hate each other for generations on end. And we see a lot of those parallels here in the U.S., I'm very sorry to say. But, you know, it'll be interesting, I suppose, to see what becomes of American politics. I just see it going in that sort of South African-like direction, which I hope I'm wrong about, but I don't think I am. But anyway, I suppose to focus on something a bit brighter, which is never a bad idea. What's your take on the future of, I suppose, excuse me, on the future of rebellion against the woke order in comedy? Do you think that there will be sort of like a tipping point where most people just don't care about it anymore, or because of the political views of the promoters and obviously a lot of the people who distribute, you know, comedic media, whether it be, I was about to say tapes, but now it would be, you know, digital audio files and such. Do you think that this sort of woke hegemony will go on forever? What do you see happening?
I think it will. There'll be a group or an amount of it that will go on forever. But I think the general public, like, it's comedy's becoming much more of a niche thing. Like luckily with the internet and social media, like, you really can find who you want. And just like, it's a kind of like a little club. Your fans can be like, I mean, honestly, like a successful comic, like, if you can get like 100 people in each major city to come see you, like, you're a success, you know? Mm-hmm. If you get to a point, like, maybe you have 100K followers on Twitter or whatever, it doesn't take a whole lot. Like, as long as you can fill like the average room in any kind of like big city, it's like, you can have a career. And people are far more into podcasts now. It's like, yeah, comedy has become so much more niche, and people have been pulling away from the mainstream sources that they used to rely on, like late night comedy shows like SNL. Both of those are places that people are not really going anymore to, because they know they can't rely on them for good. You know, they don't have good tastes, good choices of, you know, they know that they're going to play it safe. You know, Tim Dillon can put out a sketch the next day when something happens, whereas SNL, it takes a whole week, and it's got to pass through so many different people for it to be approved. And just an individual influencer can put something out way quicker. So they have that upper hand, and just way more freedom and way more like technology at their fingertips to put stuff out there. It's easier to make sketches. It's like, there are apps you can. You need like Final Cut Pro and have like a really good knowledge of that and like editing. And it used to be like very daunting. And now it's like, you can just, if you get the right app, you can put something together that's pretty funny. You can put something funny together in your Instagram stories. So it's made it a lot easier for like anybody to make funny content.
It has. Yeah. You know, even though mass information technology certainly has its drawbacks, it has many, many benefits as well. And everything you just described in terms of the evolution of comedy and how easy it is to put out your own content is a plus. Like Cato Gottfried is able to put its own stuff out there, even though in the old days we'd have to have had, you know, a radio transmitter, and that would have made us subject to all kinds of unfortunate regulations and all that stuff. It would have been much more expensive. So yeah, there has been certainly the democratization, if you will, of content distribution because of, you know, the technological advancement. And that's a good thing. It could also be a bad thing because a lot of people could put, you know, garbage out there, which incites people and it creates problems. But you have to take the good with the bad, and that's what free speech is. And respect for free speech means that you have to accept that views which are not your own, which you find abhorrent, are going to be able to be disseminated without, you know, a court order preventing them from getting spread. And a lot of people, it seems, just are not keen on free speech nowadays. They want their point of view to be the only point of view, and they have no respect for divergent perspectives.
Hi.
No problem.
I heard all that. My cord did kick me out, but then I came back. But you were crushing it.
Thank you. Thank you. Anything to say about it before we move on?
No, we summed it up. I think we solved everything. It's just no one will listen to us. That's the thing, is like the left controls a lot. Yeah. Once the majority of people can pull away from the mainstream media, like, just fucking turn it off and start to think for yourselves little by little. That's number one. And then number two is like, yeah, like voting in the right local people into power, even though the choices might be like kind of grim, but
yeah. I will say, this isn't the last call, but it is the call before the last call. If you have a reasonable, responsible question or comment for Chrissy or myself, which of course means something within the YouTube guidelines, please do leave it via Streamlabs. Thank you very much in advance. Get it as soon as you can. Anyway, so, you know, Chrissy, what do you think about, I suppose, the politics of New York City? Because the victory of Eric Adams was something that the far left did not want. You wouldn't really call him a conservative, but he certainly is more of a traditional, I suppose, Democrat by the standards of New York. And then you have that fellow running against him, Curtis Sliwa, who is the founder of the Guardian Angels, which some people confuse with Hell's Angels, but they're two very different things. And he is running, I think, in certain respects, actually to the left this is going to sound ridiculous. I almost said Eric Garner. He's running to the left of Eric Garner. I don't know why that name popped into my head, but that's not what I meant. But he's running to the left of the Democratic nominee. Any thoughts on that, Chrissy?
Yeah, he ran his whole campaign on selling loose cigarettes. Right?
Yeah, really.
God, crazy. I don't know. I don't have much hope for New York City. Uh-huh. I think everybody who could afford to leave has left or is going to leave pretty darn soon. I don't know. I don't care like what kind of Democrat you are. Like, you're just not going to turn it around. I don't know. I have like very little hope for New York City.
I have no hope at all. I just wanted to hear your point. I just wanted to hear your point of view, obviously. But
it's a shithole. It's that the crime is unbelievable. There's people shooting up in the subways, like in the subway steps, like cops are afraid to do their job, and it's like, it's going to take a few years, I think, before that starts to change.
If it ever does. I think I know why I confused Eric Az with Eric Garner, because they're both named Eric. And whenever you think of New York City and Eric, the whole Eric Garner thing comes to mind. But it's just that was a real roller coaster, to say the least. But no, I think that there's really obviously no hope for the Republican nominee in that, in the New York City mayoral election. New York City, it seems, is going down the path of other urban centers in the U.S. where they lost a lot of their clout, a lot of people who would have made this place a decent one to live in. And the city then is left to folks who are not good stewards of it, to be very kind. And that's where you see the decline of, like, you know, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Detroit, other places like out west, Tacoma, so on and so forth. And it's sad to see, but I mean, that is the course which a lot of cities take.
Yeah, of course. Like, and you can't blame somebody for being like, shit, like, it's New York City's like the Titanic and it's going to be hard to turn this ship around. And it's easier for people to just like get the hell out and go to a city that's going to support the needs of them and their family. Mm-hmm. And you can't blame people for that. Right. And all that's, and even I notice it even when I do comedy in the city now, like I did a show like a few weeks ago and I was like, I was like, why isn't my stuff hitting? Why does it feel weird in here? And I'm like, oh God, this whole audience is just full of like young kids, like either like students, like NYU students, or just like young, like broke people who couldn't afford to get the hell out of New York City. And it just doesn't, it's a weird vibe. And even comics who were like performing at the Cellar say the same thing, that like, it's just not fun. It feels weird to perform for audiences in New York City now.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, and that's obviously what, you know, political polarization does. It allows people not to have a good time. So it's, you know, you're just seeing the results of that in a place like New York. I'm very sorry to say, because that was the epicenter of comedy in American history, not just, you know, New York history, not the history of New York State. I mean, New York City is where basically the American comedy industry, as we now know it, was born. So to see it in such, you know, a situation as you describe is sad for a host of reasons.
Yeah, I mean, New York City had a great run. They really gave it their best. And we'll see what the future holds. Like, maybe, you know, places in Texas or like Austin will blow up and become the next New York, although it's kind of impossible. But it'll be like a different comedy hub. And really, it's become so decentralized. It's like you don't have to live in a big city to make an impact in the comedy scene. Like, you can make good content from anywhere, which is really cool, and frees it up to like a lot more people to make a dent.
Certainly, no question about that. And from Mark Erzhavik, what do you think of comedians like Sacha Baron Cohen, who use comedy deceptively to try and portray anyone on the right as a racist slash bigot slash sexist slash homophobe, etc.? It's interesting because earlier in his career, Cohen did not do, you know, this sort of thing. This is something of a new development for him. I would think that in his case specifically, it's just him trying to keep up with the times. And as Chrissy said, not make himself vulnerable to stuff he said in the past. Like during his Rainbow Jeremy days, it would be, it's ridiculous to say that, you know, back then he was in favor of PC culture, but I think he, like others, is just, you know, has upped his game, so to speak, to remain not necessarily relevant in the comedy world, but in polite society, which, you know, you can certainly see why people have this motivation, but it's very bad because they're being hypocrites, first and foremost. And secondly, they're stifling effectively freedom of speech. But I think it's very bad that the, as you say, use comedy deceptively, try and portray the people in the way that he portrays them. That's very bad for a host of reasons. I mean, people have always used comedy to communicate what one might call ulterior motives. It happens on any side imaginable and for a host of different reasons. But what he's doing now is so sort of contrary to the spirit of what he started out doing that it's clearly just a survival tactic for his career. And I think that it's bad. I have a very low opinion of what he's doing. And other people like him, by the way, because you said it's comedians. It's not just him. He's part of a trend that Chrissy identified earlier. And it's a very, very unfortunate one. From my perspective. Chrissy, anything to say about what Mark brought up?
Yeah, it is hard. And it's like he used the word, he didn't say the word betrayed, but like, yeah, tricked almost. And that's like, that just speaks to like the impact that like comedians and entertainers can have on people. You feel like you get to know them. You feel like you fall in love with their style and their sense of humor. And then they make a right turn and you're like, oh, is this who you really were all along? Or are you just doing this to be accepted by your peers and to get work? And it's like, what comics and entertainers and content creators are like, you know, the word grifter gets thrown around. People think I'm a grifter. People think I don't actually like believe the things that I say. And I'm like, well, it's like, how long can you keep up the grift for? I mean, it's like, like, yeah, I went to the trouble. I got an American flag. Like, I'm really just doing all the things to convince you guys. But I understand it because like, you just like, you fall in love with certain comics and you fall in love with certain movies. And then if somebody like does something different, you're like, oh man, like, did I ever know you? Are you just at the whim of whatever Hollywood, of whatever your career is going to be boosted by? A lot of people feel that way. Like Amy Schumer is such a popular example. She rose to fame and people fell in love with her because she had like almost like a male style of stand up. Like she just was like, good. And then there's rumors like, oh, did Anthony Jeselnik help her write stuff because she was dating him at the time? Like, is that what helped her form her style? And then is the woke Amy who she really was? And then she just got famous enough to like take off the suit, right? Or I don't know, like unveil her real self. So it's very frustrating. I really feel for people who are like, oh man, like I feel weird for liking this person. And it's, you think you know somebody and then they make a turn. And yeah, so it's hard to know, like, is this who Sacha Baron Cohen really was, or was he just doing it because he was trying to appease, you know, the Hollywood left?
So. I think that clearly all these folks had different views when they were really funny, when their careers were taking off. And I think that they just adapted as time went on. There's even Sarah Silverman, who was clearly, I think, one of the most talented comedians of recent American history. I don't think anybody could really, you know, argue against that. But she recently said that her side is so puritanical, more or less, and that she's very dispirited with it. And I think she's even questioning her membership in the Democratic Party. So I think that even for these people who've adapted to make themselves palatable in the current age, I think there is at least at some level of despair. She might just be more honest than others by talking about it in public, but keeping up with all this BS, with all this puritanical garbage, takes a toll on anyone. And I'm sure that, you know, a lot of people who've had to adapt their views, regardless of whether or not they really have changed their views, I'm sure that they feel a pressure to sort of keep up with the madness. And eventually, I think a lot of them are just going to be passed by because the woke left demands more and more and more. It just doesn't stop, you know, at standing against racial hatred or whatnot. It's really a religion. And like other religions, the more you give of yourself to it, the more it demands of you. So I think it's a very bad situation.
Yeah, that's why I give anybody props who's like, just try to speak your mind at all times and like be true to yourself. And it's a good reminder to me, like, when I get really famous, when I blow up. No, I, you know, it's like, that's the challenge. Like, as you earn more and become more successful. Like, okay, like, but stay grounded. You know, that's what happens. A lot of these celebrities, the more famous they get, the more rich they get, the more disconnected and irrelevant they become, and the more out of touch they become with the average person, which is why people come are like disillusioned by a lot of these celebrities and just kind of like, huh? Like, why should we listen to what the fuck they have to say? Like, why should we watch these award shows anymore? Like, they don't represent us. We don't care what they have to say. Like, they're there to do a job. You wouldn't want to listen to your dentist like go off on a long tangent about politics. Like, just like how people don't want to hear what actors have to say. And now it's almost like our journalists want to become like actors and get a huge, you know, fame and a huge following. And our actors kind of want to become like journalists, like, oh, well, they have this following already. And they want to be like, oh, I'm a person of note. Like, I'm a tastemaker. You know, you guys got to listen to me and my opinion fucking matters so much. So it's like we're seeing this weird like kind of meshing of actors and journalists.
Yes, we are. And it's, I think, because of the overall politicization of society, which is having negative ramifications in too many ways to describe.
Totes.
And yeah. And this is The Last Call. If you have a reasonable, responsible question or comment for Chrissy or myself, please leave it via Streamlabs. And of course, reasonable, responsible means within the YouTube guidelines. Thank you very much in advance. This is The Last Call. So if you have something, get it in as soon as you can. You know, I think I did mention, Chrissy, that I would mention toward the end of the show my book. And so I'll just bring it up again.
You wrote a book.
Yeah. If anyone would like to get it, it's on Amazon. Runaway Masters, A True Story of Slavery, Freedom, Triumph, and Tragedy. We got 1619 and 1776. If you have Kindle Unlimited, you can get it for free. So that is that's the situation there. I'm very proud of it. Communicates a lot of worthwhile messages about what's going on today. And I do hope that people learn something from it. It's not just, you know, it is a book about history. It's a nonfiction book, but it's a book about history that has many, I think, lessons for what's happening in the present day. So that is my take there. I don't want to spend too much more time on it, but I'll just show it to people again.
I too wrote a book. Oh, wait, I can't tell. Runaway Masturbators. We should both, let's show our books at the same time. It's a chilling tale of women who are, they've been cast out of their homes for their masturbating habits. And, you know, there's a tale of a young girl who short circuits the power in her village's, in her whole village, because she had a plug-in vibrator. So check it out. It's pretty hard to get. I mean, there's really only this one copy right here. Runaway Masturbators. It's probably my finest work.
It sounds like an interesting book, but I'm sure you will have many more of increasingly superior quality. But no, Runaway Masters is a very different subject matter, but that's a very interesting subject matter indeed. It's actually, in a bizarre sense, it would have been timely, or maybe it still is, in certain societies where people were, like, you know, cast out of their house and their society for this, that, or the other thing when it comes to sex. So it's interesting. But what's really interesting, speaking of, I suppose, sex, moreover, is how sexual liberation has come quite far in the U.S. And it's basically gone, I think, as far as it could go among consenting adults. But now there's, like, the push for the invention of new forms of liberation, like, you know, drag queen story hour and the transitioning of minors. And I think this is where liberation meets totalitarianism or tyranny, because at this point you're imposing things onto people in the name of freedom. And these things obviously are quite damaging, generally speaking, if not in totality, to children. And I think we're going to see more and more of this very unfortunate stuff as time rolls along.
That's sad. That's sad, Joseph. We're supposed to end on a high note.
Well, we can end on a high note. Let me see if there's anything that anybody's dropped on Streamlabs. Maybe they will provide us with something inspiring, or maybe not. But we'll see. Right now, it's doing its cartwheel, and it's you know, spinning as it often does. But I think one thing to be optimistic about, at least in today's socio-political alignment, is that people are much more skeptical than they used to be about authoritative sources. And that has some drawbacks because they might believe total nonsense in lieu of that. But they are more cautious about believing stuff which they are told that they should believe in order to be good people or functional people or intelligent people. And that, in that regard, when I'm talking about it, it's healthy because nobody should be made to believe something which they don't think is true simply because they're told that they need to believe in it. And that more and more people are developing the sense of skepticism, I think, is a good thing. Like I keep mentioning, we take it to some bad places, but the trend itself is not negative. So that is something which we should be happy about, or at least I hope we are.
Yeah. Stay skeptical. Don't ignore your gut feelings. Always ask questions. Never apologize if for something you didn't do or something that you didn't do with an ill intention. Don't be a little bitch.
That really is it. It's interesting because there is so much pressure for people today to apologize for things that are innocuous or things that they didn't intend to say, or maybe things that they never even said. And it's really creating a society where it's like, number one, a snitch culture, but number two, I keep using this word because it's so true, but the sort of puritanical culture, specifically from a pietistic perspective. And it's really scary in a way, but it gives people power who just enjoy, I think, lording themselves over other people. And that, I think, is the primary mover of wokeness. It's just a desire to control people while at the same time getting a moral high off of it. And that could be very addictive for some understandable reasons, but it's very destructive for some reasons, which I hope are equally understandable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's, whether I don't really think wokeness will ever go away. I call this period the Great Awakening.
It's a good one. Did you think of that yourself?
No, others have brought it up, but it's a great way to describe it because it is like a religious revival, except with a new creed than, you know, the traditional one in America, which is Christianity. But the Great Awakening, like other religious revivals, will burn off after a time. But, you know, the problem is that it creates a lot of fanatics who suck up the oxygen and they get so much, you know, attention because of that. But there are dissidents as well, you know, there have always been. And what's interesting about this day and age is that the dissidents will be branded as people on the right, which traditionally the dissidents were thought of as being on the left. So things have sort of gone 180 in that regard. And how, you know, the history develops over the next several years and what the history's, I suppose, ultimate role is going, you know, way down the road, long after everyone listening to this or watching this is no longer around, that will be interesting as well. So
we're in the gulags.
Yeah. Well,
and this podcast has been turned to dust.
Virtual dust. But yeah, but it'll be interesting to see, I think, what will come out of this period, because bleak as it seems, there are, of course, silver linings to the clouds. And those silver linings could definitely have some unpredictable turns of events, which are not bad at all. So we have to wait and see. But I think what's very important in the meanwhile is that people be true to themselves and they speak their mind and that they don't, you know, feel like they need to apologize for saying stuff which is true based upon their perception of it, and that they're not, you know, keen on making others into villains simply because they disagree with them. This shouldn't be radical stuff to say or profound in any respect, but we live in an age where it needs to be said, which is negative, but, you know, people need to say it all the same.
Yeah, I think we have to be a little bit willing to sacrifice a little bit of our reputation or standing in like polite society or maybe even friends. Cause what's the alternative to like lose your freedoms, lose your country? I think it's a worthy sacrifice, you know, just be like, yeah, you lose some fucking douchebag cunty girls you went to college with as friends, but you know, you got to speak your mind and put it out there so that maybe we, you know, people who feel the same don't feel so alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's unfortunate that we're at this point, but since we are at this point, it's what's necessary. Not necessarily you should try to go, obviously, go around cutting out your friends because you disagree.
Cut them out. Unfriend them before they can unfriend you.
To have people in your life who try to manipulate your points, your point of view in order to agree with theirs, or trying to browbeat you or public shame you, is not worth it, obviously. And it should go without saying that those people ought to have no place in one's, you know, circle of friends. But it's just, you know, it's unfortunate, I guess, that so many people feel compelled to do this. But that's where we are. So on a happy note, as we do finally wind things down now, there is a great deal of resistance toward the woke hegemony. And I think that this resistance has the potential to produce some really positive developments for individual rights and liberties as time goes along. There are never any guarantees about this sort of thing, but we're not necessarily at the point of all hope is lost. Chrissy, anything to say before we leave?
Yeah, just like you said, don't lose hope. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not over till it's over.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hope always has to be rational, but it's not like, you know, we're at the point of everybody being in a gulag, at least not yet. So there are still many, I think, twists and turns in the struggle for freedom, essentially. And the next few years are going to be really interesting to see which side winds up dominating the discourse. I think the left has, because of its political demographics, it has sort of like an inevitable majority in the future for presidential races. That doesn't necessarily mean that it would control all state houses or Congress. And how these, you know, two visions of the human species basically play out, a vision which holds it in a religious light and then another vision which holds it in a more humanistic light, that will be fascinating to see what happens with that. And obviously, this is a matter that goes far beyond the political, but it will be interesting all the same.
And in the meantime, there's port wine.
Yeah, lots of it if you know where to get it. But anyway, Chrissy, thank you very much for coming on the show tonight. It was a great discussion, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good. I really kept up with you, and you're like the smart one. So this was great.
There are much smarter people. I have no hesitation in saying.
Yeah, but
that.
None with that hat, and that's what matters.
Thank you very much, Chrissy, and I thank everyone who tuned in. I'm just doing the last refresh of Streamlabs to make sure that nothing was missed, because I really hate it when that happens. Thankfully, it happens very rarely, but sometimes Streamlabs sends stuff in after the show ends. I don't know why, but it does. But I'm just trying to make sure that did not happen tonight, and it did not happen. From what I see. So, everyone, thank you very much for tuning in. See you next time. Before we go, though, if you like this episode and want to support the show, please consider donating to it by clicking on the PayPal link in the description below. Paul and I appreciate your generosity.
Where's Paul?
Oh, Paul is at a conference in Minneapolis.
Is he in the gulags?
No, he's not. He's the editor of a magazine, and he's out there to do some stuff for it. But you and him need to get together on an episode of this show, because that would be really interesting. I think that, it would be really two totally different personalities, but I think that you'd have some very interesting conversations, and I would basically just sort of sit back like this and listen, because I'd be very interested to hear it myself. It would be real fun. But anyway, so that is that's the situation there. But I hope that you would like to come on the show again, and I hope then that he could come on as well.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Excellent. So am I. Well, everyone, take it easy. Be sure to consider checking out my book on Amazon.
and of course, my book, not on Amazon. Literally, it's just this one copy that I wrote myself. In my own handwriting.
Hot off the press, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hot off the press.
All right. Take it easy, everyone. Have a great night. Bye-bye.